Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you. Chose that you should exist. Chose you. Consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed, and we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all hearts, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way, and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be. That you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of. That you deserve the existence you have been given, or it would not have been granted to you. That you deserve all the love you can imagine, because love is what you are made out of. That you deserve all the light you can create in your life, because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
Welcome to Revolutionary Life. This is Gary. I want to welcome everybody who's listening in. Also, we'll be on for a while tonight. And so you can all come in when you get ready. Actually, we're here from 7 to 9 p.m. every weekday night and tonight. And make sure, you guys, I got also have a Facebook page over there called the same thing as the radio show. Revolutionary life. If you knew, I've explained that 100 times, that revolution ain't nothing but change. And those of us who change age, those of us who want to see change, are revolutionary or revolutionary in our aspirations. Revolutionary life is about revolution in every change, in every part of your life. Tonight, we're going to talk about the money part, the financial part, the budget part, the living, surviving, and making your way part.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, we're going to talk about cash money. Listen up, because you probably got some in your pocket. You probably got some of this stuff in a bank somewhere. You carrying around a plastic card representing what you have or haven't got. So if you use money, I need you to listen up tonight. If you need money, I need you to listen up tonight. If you got more money than you know what to do with, I want you to listen up tonight. Because it's all about that money, ain't it? And that's why you get up in the morning. That's why you make you cut that slave. That's why you on that grind. That's why you after that bag. That's why you hustling, struggling, budgeting, trying to make ends meet, trying to get rich, trying to get wealthy, or just trying to get by. You need to talk. We need to talk. Welcome to Revolutionary Life. We're talking money tonight. Clearing my throat because we got a long ways to go. And it's short time to get there. Our session tonight asked you, said that we were going to break down the money in your pocket. We were going to break down where it came from, where it goes. And the reason we're going to do that is because some people don't consider where it comes from. Some people don't care where it came from or where it goes. Some people just want some. Some people don't care what it's worth or what it isn't worth. And they don't even know or care who controls the money in their pocket. If you missed my last presentation, I was talking about wages and labor. And I told you about the minimum wage and how it was tied to the cost of living until Ronald Reagan became president in 1979. Ronald Reagan froze the minimum wage while prices continued to rise. And I told you, you got poor without anybody taking a dime out your pocket. Care about your money? Listen up. Need money? Listen up. We're going to talk money tonight. Money, 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 money. We're going to talk money tonight. Your money. Or what you call your money. I mean, you don't print it. You don't control its value. Let's get down to it. How much control do you have over money? You know how to make some? Do you know how to spend it? Do you know how to invest it? Do you know what it is or what it can do for you and can't? Do you care? If you don't care, you're probably hustling. I was raised to believe, and I'm talking about a certain group of people who work for a living. I'm talking about a certain group of people who are running small businesses out there. I'm talking about people who are trying to make a living. I mean, if you were born wealthy, you probably don't have to worry about money. In fact, guys, I've heard independently wealthy people, kids and adults who come up in wealthy families. And what is it like, I asked. And they told me, well, yeah, we wealthy. We've always been wealthy, it seems. We have as many problems as you have. Money just isn't one of them. That's what they told me. Oh, yeah, I got as many problems as you got. Money just ain't one of them. Is it one of yours? Then we got to talk. Welcome to Revolutionary Life tonight, guys. Tonight, we're going to talk about money. You need it. You got it. You use it. Why not? Talk about it. You ain't got enough of it. You got too much of it. What? Either way, we need to talk. Now, first of all, this conversation is going to start with just the basic, guys, understanding of the thing you call money. Interesting enough, it has a history older than you. You probably don't know that history. Some of you may not even care. All you want is some of it. That's good enough for you. And you're off to the races until you don't have any more. Then it's time to go get some more. And the wheel turns around and round. You know, the little hamster on the wheel in the hamster cage, and he's on that little wheel going round and round. He ain't going nowhere. He's wearing himself out. He's getting old. He's breaking down. He's losing everything because he ain't got time to do anything but run. And ain't going nowhere. Listen to me. Money at ancient times used to be anything from cowrie shells to salt. Salt. Table salt. something like table salt. Salt. And that's where the word salary comes from. In the Latin, salt is pronounced sal. S-A-L. Sal. And so we get the word salary because people used to get paid in salt. And salt was money. It was currency. You could take that salt and buy yourself with it. People would trade you goods and services for your salt. It was that precious. Cowrie shells, little shells you find by the seashore. These little cowrie shells used to be worth money, were money. Their value, their worth, and this is important, guys, the worth of money was pretty much set. You knew what a cowrie shell was worth, and everybody else did too. So how was we able to use salt and cowrie shells and stuff like that for money? Money, check this out. Go to the marketplace and buy stuff. You go to the marketplace in the old days to trade. If you had some cattle, maybe you take one of them. You couldn't afford to take all of them. You needed them. So you take a few of them. You didn't have a lot. But you take a few cattle, maybe one or two, to the marketplace because y'all needed some wheat or grains to make bread. And y'all didn't grow grains. Y'all made cattle. Y'all grew cattle. And you need lots of grain for your cattle and for bread and other things. And so you went to the market. And when you got to the market, there was guys there who grow wheat. And they were selling wheat. And you wanted wheat. And so you walked up to dude and said, I got these two cows. I'll trade them for you for certain bales, several bales of that wheat you got there. The guy looked at you and said, look, I don't need no cows. I mean, I got the wheat, but I ain't selling them for cows. I ain't trading for cows. I don't need no cows. I don't do cows. Now, there's a guy down the street there on the in the marketplace. He take cows. But he don't sell wheat, he sell fish. Now, if you had some fish, I'd sell you some wheat. So the guy takes his cows and go on down through the market and meets this guy with the fish and trades his cows for fish. He don't need no fish, but he can't get that wheat with fish. So he goes down to the market, trades his cows for fish, goes back to the guy with the wheat and said, now I got fish. So the guy said, now we working. You give me some fish, I'll give you some wheat. Deal was done. That's the marketplace. That's what's trading back in the day. Money, cowrie shells, salt, whatever, money was introduced to the marketplace as a universal means of exchange. Listen to me. A universal means of exchange. What am I talking about? Trade my cows at the front door in the market for money. And once I stepped into the market with this money I just traded my cows for, I could buy anything anybody got there. I don't care if the guy wants cows or not. I ain't got cows. I got money. And everybody takes money. And so I'm able to go into the market, buy my wheat, and go home. I ain't got to look for some guy who wants what the wheat guy wants and all that kind of stuff and do all this trading back and forth. No, I got a universal. Everybody accepts cowrie shells. And the guy at the front door at the market, he'll trade whatever you got and give you a number of cowrie shells for what you bring to the market. And when you go walk into the market, now you got cowrie shells. Now you can buy whatever you want from whoever you want. No matter what they're selling, they will take your cowrie shells in exchange for their product. They won't take cows because they don't do cows. But if you put that money on them, they'll make that trade with you. And so money made the whole marketplace run smoother. People wouldn't running around trying to hustle. This guy won't sell me wheat for my cows. He won't fish. I got to find some guy who sells fish, sell him my cows, get some fish, and go back to this guy with the wheat and work out the deal with him and get me some wheat. I don't have to do that anymore. I got money. I got a universal means of exchange. I got something accepted by everyone. And so when I walk into the market with cowrie shells, I go where I want to. I go whatever market, whatever merchant I want to, and buy whatever he has, no questions asked. I ain't running all over the market, wheeling and dealing, trying to get one thing done. It's smooth. It made the marketplace run smooth when you entered the market with money. That's money, a universal means of exchange. And that's all money was meant to be. At that time, money was revolutionary because it made the marketplace run so smooth. What happened, guys? How did money become the root of all evil? And how did money become the way it is now? What do I mean by the way it is now? What happened to money? As a universe, as a revolutionary thing, as a positive thing, and a thing that made the marketplace move. What happened? Somebody decided to try to make money off money. Listen to me because I'm finna tell you where we stand today. It started a long time ago. Instead of using money as why it was created, as just a universal means of exchange to grease the marketplace and make everything run smoother, somebody decide that they were going to use money to make money, something money was never created to do. What am I talking about, using money to make money? I'm talking about use money to make money by loaning money. Loaning money for more money with interest. All right? When somebody decides to sell money as a commodity. By definition, a commodity is anything produced for the sole purpose of sale or trade. Anything produced for the sole purpose, for no other reason than for sale or trade, is a commodity. It's one definition of a commodity. Money was never meant to be a commodity. You weren't selling and trading money for money. You traded your goods for money so you could go into the market and buy what you wanted to buy. It was an exchange at the front door. Now, this was illegal, unchristian, even religious institutions frowned it upon using money to make money for something it was never meant to be. In fact, in the Christian religion, there was a law against something called usury. What is usury? Loaning money for more money in return. Making money off money, something money wasn't created to do. So it moved from just being a universal means of exchange and making everybody's life easier in the marketplace to actually becoming a commodity that can be bought and sold. The value, guys, how much your money is worth is where it comes down to. How much you can buy with that money is what it comes down to now. And all of that changed when money became a commodity. When somebody decided to try to make money off money, something it was never, ever meant to do. The horse is out the barn. It's too late to reverse that, revolutionaries, if you're thinking about it. But Christians couldn't loan money for money. Somebody needs to borrow something, you lend it to them if you had it. You didn't lend it to them for interest. They didn't pay you back more than you gave them. You loaned them. People always lend each other tools, money, whatever. You lend people. You lend your neighbor the water hose. You lend your neighbor the hedge clippers or whatever. He gets through with them, he returns the hedge clippers. But if you lend if an institution lend you a dollar, when you get through with it and you go back to pay that dollar back, it's going to be a $2. It's going to be a dollar and a dime, a dollar and a quarter, a dollar and 50. They're making money off of money it was never meant to do. And so, yeah, money became the root of all evil. As debt. Became valuable to some. To some, it was more important to have debt, to get people in debt. Now, religiously, on the religious level, for a while, Christians could not engage in usury, the loaning of money, for interest, for profit. Somebody needed money, you lend it to them, you lend it to them. They paid you back. They didn't have to pay you more than you gave them. Money became a commodity in that era. Now, there was a religion that did not have a law against usury. That was Judaism. And Judaism, there was no law against making money off of money. And so history shows more of this type of use of money, loaning, to grow among the Jewish community more than it did among the Christian community, which was still under Christian law that we don't do that. Jews didn't have that law. So they were free to loan money. Now, guys, a lot of people didn't like this. everybody knew that money wasn't supposed to be a commodity. You weren't supposed to make money off of money. Money was just something you use in the stock to make things run smoother. That's it. Oh, no. And so for the Jewish people who were able to loan money, and you had all these kings and queens all over the world, the king of Italy, the king of the Kaisers and Czars, and they had armies, and they were fighting wars, and they needed money. You can't fight a war without arms, and so you have to have money to buy, outfit your soldiers and horses and all that kind of stuff. And so these kings and queens found themselves in the middle of wars, running out of money, and they had to borrow some money. Some people would lend them money if they would pay it back. Some people would lend them money for money. The Jewish community could do that with no problem. The Christian community could not. Now, this is very interesting. I'm pointing this out, guys. The reason I'm pointing out this religious connection to usury, to loaning money for money, to using money to make money, to this aberration, this degradation of the concept of money. The reason I'm making this analogy on the religious level is because the Jewish history, man, is a history of a lot of oppression. A lot of oppression for different reasons, but a lot of oppression. So here's one, for example, where it comes to money. Let me give you an example of how Jews were persecuted. There's something in the Jewish history called, in the European history, called pogroms. P-O-G-R-A-M. Not programs, pogroms. Pogroms. Look it up, guys. What's a pogrom? Well, let me give you a scenario. The Jewish merchant, the Jewish loan company, you know, let's say you were loaning money as a Jew, and you had your shingle outside, either the three balls or a red shield or something to indicate to people coming down the street that this is a place where you can borrow money. Well, people would, mostly farmers back then, most everybody lived in agricultural communities back then, but factories were beginning and that kind of thing. So cities were being developed, selling, merchants, trading all over the country and all over the world with trade routes all over the world, all over the known world at the time, Europe. Well, let me give you a scenario. Let's say you're in Poland and there's Polish Jews who loan money. And let's say the everyday working farm guy, came on hard times. A farmer, and you're used to borrowing money. If you're a farmer, if you're a planter, you know that you got to buy seed, but you ain't making money off of seed. You got to nurture seed until the plant grows. You still ain't made any money. Until the plant is ready to be harvested, you still ain't made any money. You're still spending money. Until you take the product to the market and sell it, that's when you get your money back. The time between buying seed, paying for it, if you had to borrow the money to buy it, could be a year, a season, a growing season. Jews in Poland loaned money. The Polish people borrowed money. So one day, there's a bunch of guys at the club, at the local pub. They drinking and they talking about their income and their finances and how hard times are. And every one of them, almost everybody in the club, everybody in the pub drinking and talking shit, everybody in the club starts talking about these Jews. Owe the Jew. I owe the Jew. I owe the Jew. So what they do, once they get good and drunk, these good Christians, once they get good and drunk, it go over to the Jewish court and burn it to the ground. That's a pogrom. And they take all their possessions back. Back then, when you went to borrow money, you put something up as collateral, your land, jewelry, keepsakes, heirlooms, whatever you had worth something, you put it up. Slaves, you could put slaves up as collateral. This is called collateral, guys. You could put slaves up as collateral for your loan and get that loan. Well, if you didn't pay that loan back, you lost your collateral. Well, in Poland, in this little Polish town, everybody was strung out. They couldn't pay to get their property back from the Jews because they couldn't pay off the loan. So what did they decide to do? They get drunk one night and decide to go burn out the Jewish quarter. The Jews generally live separate from the rest of the community. And so that was called a pogrom. You burnt down the Jewish quarter and you took all your stuff back. You burn up any records saying that you owe anybody anything. If you had jewelry, candelabras, gold, watches, whatever that the Jews were holding for as collateral, you got a chance to burn down the Jewish houses and take your money back and find your watches and stuff and take all your shit back. That was a pogrom, a pogrom. Look it up, guys. Jewish pogroms. One of the things that sparked Jewish pogroms was this loaning of money. Christians couldn't do it. It was against Christian law. But there was nothing stopping Jews from doing it. And so I want to put that forward, guys, only because I want you to understand why I brought the religious part in there. People actually fought against this concept of ruining money this way. If I lend you $5, you owe me $5. You don't owe me $6 or five and a dime, tell the truth. But people start making money off of money. And here we go today. Money has now become a commodity. Yes, sir. There's a money market. Now you go to the market, instead of buying cows or wheat, you go to the market and buy money. There's a money market, guys. Money can be bought and sold. And so, why is that important to you? You wanted some money, so you can buy what you want. All you want is that bag. All you wanted to get rich. All you wanted is to feed your family, to make ends meet. And you need some money. Well, here's the thing, guys. Ability to feed yourself, clothe yourself, house yourself and your family. Your ability to, quote, make ends meet ain't up to you. You don't set prices. You don't determine the value of a dollar from one day to the next. I told you. When Ronald Reagan froze the minimum wage at $3.35 an hour and the cost of living continued to rise up, you got poor. With the money in your pocket, you got poor. When $50, instead of buying $50 worth of stuff, only bought $25 worth of stuff, you got poor. When that $100 would only buy $50 worth of merchandise, you got poor. You don't control the money supply. The Federal Reserve. We have something called the Federal Reserve in this country that makes our dollars, American dollars. And most industrialized countries, most big nations have a central bank like the Federal Reserve, which is not federal. It's not run by the government. It's run by private individuals, bankers and the like. But we call it the Federal Reserve, like there's some reserve there of money, but they're printing money. Take a dollar out of your pocket, look across the top of it. It should say Federal Reserve note on it. If it does, that's who made it. That's who printed it before you got it. Our government buys money. That dollar bill you got in your pocket was printed by a private organization called the Federal Reserve and sold to the treasury of the United States for profit, lent to banks. You know, banks get a lending rate that's different from yours, by the way. It's called a prime lending rate, and that goes to the best customers. So if you want to borrow some money, the Federal Reserve got special prices for you bankers. The rest of us have to pay whatever the market will bear. Now, you need money. Use some money. But you don't control it. You don't print it. You don't determine its worth. It could be worth less while it's sitting in your pocket or your bank account. So what are you going to do? How are you budgeting? How are you making ends meet when you don't know from one day to the other if prices are going to go up or money's going to go down? Somebody knows, and that's the money market. That's Wall Street, guys. You don't invest in stocks. You don't invest in bonds. You don't invest in the stock market. You ain't interested in the stock market. You're trying to feed your family. You're trying to make ends meet. You are invested in the stock market whether you know it or not. Guys, my sister, my oldest sister, came to me one day. About 20 years ago now, 10 years at least, maybe 20 years ago, 10 years at least, 10, 15 years. And she had an envelope from the company that she worked for, big company. And she said, "Do you understand this?" And I opened the envelope to look at it. And the envelope was from a financial institution called Vanguard. And the envelope indicated that she owned stock. I said, "Oh, this is a report on the stock that you own." And she said, "The stock that I own? Yeah. They've taken part of your retirement." This is Reaganomics, guys. This is another part of the Reagan Revolution, guys. This is what happened to your pension. This is what happened to your retirement. This is introduction of the IRA. Right? The retirement funds. The individual retirement funds. The Roth IRA. This type of IRA. As opposed to your regular pension or your regular retirement. Right? So the moment you got an IRA, the moment your retirement money was partially put into stocks, my sister didn't know anything about stocks. How did she know how her stocks were doing or what that meant? Was she making money, losing money? She didn't know. Everyday working people could have cared less. Where I came from, could have cared less about what the stock market was doing. And it walked in our house, the stock market did. Oh, no. You're not interested in stocks and bonds and all that kind of stuff. You don't play the stock market, but it plays you. That again, you don't play the stock market, baby, but it does play you. How you gonna survive? We're gonna talk about that when I get back. I'm gonna give y'all a little break, play y'all a little music. I want you to think about that. I know you ain't interested in all this financial information. You don't care where money came from. You don't care who determines how much it's worth. You ain't into stock markets and investments and all that stuff. You sell your labor for a living, by the hour. But you better get interested. Because though you don't play the stock market, what I said, it does play you. I'll be back. back. Welcome to Revolutionary Life, guys, where we look at every aspect of life from a revolutionary point of view. And revolution ain't nothing but change. Don't be afraid that some things need to be changed. Don't you agree? Let me ask you a question, guys. How many of y'all out there in debt? One jump ahead of your bills. One jump behind them. This presentation is for you. This presentation is for you, sweetheart. All right? So if you think it don't relate to you, tell me something. Do you use money? Has the stock market walked into your house, even though you're not invested in it? I mean, your retirement fund partially invested in Vanguard or some other financial institution that is selling it on them, that is buying and trading on the market on your behalf, and you have no idea until you get a letter in the mail how things are going, what you own, don't own, how much you've made, how much you've lost from your retirement as a result of stocks going down. Oh, yeah. Oh, you don't play the stock market, baby, but I told you. It sure plays you. There's something called a debt market as well. Can be bought and sold. And so debt now is valuable. You know what? Our big companies were allowed during the Reagan administration, the Reagan Revolution, they were allowed to put their accounts receivable, money they are owed, to add that to their net worth. Even though they didn't have the money, but they got all this debt. They got all these people promising them money. They got these contracts here that says somebody going to pay them $10 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month. They ain't got the $100 yet. But they can add, they can make it part of their net. They can introduce it, publish it as part of their net worth, their accounts receivable, their money they yet to have. And may not get if you don't pay them. And so, debt. Guys, let me give you an example. You pay down payment on a car. I get you to sign papers to say you're going to pay $700 a month for this nice car until you pay it off. You pay the down payment. You put your John Hancock on the papers, you sign the papers, the car company can take that piece of paper you just signed, that promise to pay, a promissory note. You know what a promissory note is? It's an IOU. You promised to pay this car company $700 a month, let's say, until you pay off that car you paid the nice down payment on already. They're going to let you have the car. They're making cars every day. So you got the car. They got a contract saying they can kick back and wait, and each month you're going to have $700 on it. Do you think they kick back and wait for your $700 every month? No. Get out of here. They can take that piece of paper and sell it. Somebody will buy that debt. When they sell your debt, you get a call from somebody you never met, never done business with, probably never even heard of. And they remind you that you owe $700. They remind you that you might owe the full price of that car. And they warn you if you don't pay this thing on off, you could screw up your credit. This is a collection agency. What is this collection agency doing calling your house? You never did business with them. They don't have any contract that says you and them are financially tied in any way. No. They went to that car company, or they went to that bank that you owe, and they said, we'll buy that person's debt from you. Well, he's supposed to pay me $700 a month, and he ain't paid me. Well, we'll buy that debt from you. How much would you sell it to us for? And we'll collect $700. So a collection agency buys debt. Debt sells, Jack. Getting you in debt makes them money. There's a debt market out there. You can buy and sell debt. So debt. The country's in debt. There's a national debt, right? The national debt. They got a big clock in New York where you can walk up and see the national debt, the dollars in national debt go by. And as they click, they just go up and up and up. And so debt sales. And are you in debt? If somebody can get you in debt, they can make some money off of you. And so they got you watching your credit score. How many of y'all out there watching your credit score? What the hell are you watching your credit score for? Because if it's good, you can go get in some more debt. Somebody will lend you some money. You see, for a working person, I'm just talking about people who go out and sell their labor, their mental and physical labor, their intellectual and physical labor for money. Are you one of them people? Do you sell yourself for money, your labor, your mind, your time for money? All right, by the hour? Or are you salaried? You get paid by the month? If you sell your labor for money, I'm talking to you for a minute. It's to you. I'll talk to your small business guys, and Lord have mercy. You think anybody's getting fleeced out here? Anyway, if you sell your labor for money, the people you work for, now you could have caught my presentation on the minimum wage, guys. And I told you there were several southern states that never had a state minimum wage. They never cared what a corporation paid you. If you got a minimum wage in my state, it was a federal minimum wage. So here's the thing. If I'm not going to pay you what you're worth, if I'm not going to pay you the cost it takes to live, I will let you borrow some money. I will make a way for you to borrow some money to close the gap between your cost of living and your earnings. Because I'm never going to pay you what you're worth. I won't make a profit like that. I won't make a big enough profit like that. I can't get to be a billionaire. I'm going to pay you as little as I can get away with. If there's a law, and I don't want to break that law, okay. So if the law says I got to pay you $7.75 an hour, federal minimum wage, then okay, I'll pay you $7.75. If it wasn't for that law, this wouldn't be a question. But there happens to be a law that had to be put into place so the people you work for didn't pay you less than it takes for you to eat, to live, to house yourself, clothe yourself, and feed yourself, and get back to work the next day. So you and I sold my labor too for money. That's how I got money, went to work for it. And so I'm not going to pay you what you're worth, and so I'm going to let you borrow some money so you can close that gap between the cost it takes for you to live and what you bring in as income. So I'll let you get into debt just to survive, just to make it happen, just to live a life. Now, I could pay you what you're worth so you can go buy what you want, cash money. But I'll never do that. But I tell you what, I can get the government to work out a situation where you can go borrow some money. I'll open up some lending institutions on every corner, payday loans, Quicken loans, loan this, loan that, Rocket loans, loan this, loan that. I'll lend you some money. But I'll never make sure. The government will never make sure. The people running this place will never make sure that you're getting paid the cost it takes to live. Like I told you, I live in one of those southern states that never considered making a minimum wage law. Couldn't give up what a corporation paid you. If it wasn't for a federal minimum wage, I wouldn't have got one. So you can go get in debt. Check your credit score. We got a loan for you. You got letters coming in the mail saying, hey, we got $1,400 down here for you right now. You can come on down and with your signature, you can get this money. Because debt pays and getting you in debt pays. Well, unfortunately, well, I wouldn't put it that way. We can't run pogroms on loan companies and take our... and take our money, take our possessions back, our collateral back, as they did in the case. But we can borrow money. You can get in debt, deep in debt. All right, guys, I got a story for you. Real story. Real story. But it's an illustration of where you stand right now. Believe me. If you work for a living, if you sell your labor, listen to me. My family came from deep south. They've been there as long as they can remember. They lived on land that belonged to the man they worked for. They had a little house, little shack on the land of the man they worked for. The man they worked for grew. He was a planter. And his product that he planted was cotton. Cotton for textiles, for clothing, and the like. And he would have to go buy seed and equipment for plowing up the land and planting the seeds and watering it all through the season until it growed up and produced cotton bolls and cotton where it could be picked and taken to the market. My family picked that cotton. My family didn't pick that cotton. My family planted that cotton. My family watered, watched, and cut the weeds away from around that cotton. Clean, kept it nice and clean so no weeds would grow up and strangle out the cotton plant. We had to chop cotton. When you call chopping cotton, you don't chop the cotton. And somebody said, we chopping cotton. They don't mean they're chopping the cotton, guys. They mean they're chopping the grass and the weeds that grow up around the cotton plant so it doesn't strangle out the coffee, take nutrients from the cotton plant, right? So my folks chop cotton, kept it clean, kept the fields clean of grass. My folks picked that cotton when it was ready to go. And believe it or not, my folks would take that cotton to the cotton to have the seeds. Cotton had seeds in it. You didn't want seeds in your cotton, so you had to take the seeds out. But they had a gin, a G-I-N, a cotton gin. It was a place where you could take your cotton, and the guy running the gin would run your cotton through this machine that was like a comb almost, like combing your hair. That comb would just pull the seeds out of your cotton. And when you got back, it was clean cotton, and it built up real nice. And big squares, big 100-pound bales. And so, just FYI, before there was a cotton gin, my family picked the seeds out of tons of cotton. Picked them with their hands. There was no cotton gin. When the cotton gin came along, picking seeds out of cotton with your hands was passe. Now you could go to the gin and pay. The man would go to the gin and pay the gin to seed his cotton, to remove the seeds from his cotton. All right. Then once that cotton was baled up, the planter would take that cotton up the highway to the next big city, up the river to the next big city, and go to the cotton exchange. And in the cotton exchange, everybody who grew cotton was up in there with their cotton and to sell it on the cotton exchange. And so everybody was bidding to buy cotton and angling to sell cotton. That's where you want to get to turn that cotton into money. Now, the reason I'm telling you this story, guys, is because when I ask you to listen to this program, when I said you needed to listen to this program, if you use money, sell your labor, mental and physical, for money. Because my family did not read the newspapers, business section of the newspapers. They read the paper, but they didn't open up the business section of the paper. And if they did open the business section, they didn't know that they could go to a section called the commodities section of the business section of the newspaper. To the commodities section, they would have saw the word cotton. And across from that word would be the price of cotton that day. My father didn't know what the price of cotton was at that marketplace, at that cotton exchange. They didn't know what cotton was, quote, going for. How much is cotton going for? They didn't know. But they see that cotton was going for so much a pound, a bale, whatever. They depended on the planter. They were illiterate. The kids didn't go to school half the time because they were working the fields, growing the cotton, protecting the cotton, taking care of the cotton. So they weren't educated. Even so, some of y'all are educated. Some of y'all got degrees. How many of y'all go to the business section of the paper or news? How many of y'all go look at the commodities section and see what products are selling for? My family didn't either. And so they depended on the man, the planter, to come back from the market and tell them how much they made. How much they made. And he could come back and say, well, cotton didn't sell much for much this year. There's too much competition. So we couldn't get much for the cotton this year. I'm sorry, guys. And here's a little bit so y'all can make it through the winter so we can start another season. But I couldn't give you a lot because we didn't make a lot. Maybe we'll have a better season next year. When my family looked at this little money from having worked all season, they knew they could make it through the winter. Food for the kids, clothing for the kids, coats, shoes, whatnot. They told them, and the planter knew it too. He knew that wasn't enough money to feed those kids. And they needed all those kids, you know. Who worked in the fields, every child could help in the fields with the work. In agricultural communities, big families were necessary to work 40 acres of land. All right? And so my family didn't look at the commodities paper. They took the man's word for it. And he knew it wasn't enough to make it through the winter. So you know what he did? He said, I'm going to do you a favor, though. Since y'all didn't make much money this year off the cotton, I'm still going to let you go down to the corner store down here and tell that man at that corner store to put on my ticket, my debt, a sack of flour, a can of lard, and maybe some shoes for these kids before it gets cold out. And so we went down to the corner store, and sure enough, the man said, okay. Well, Mr. Planner said, it's all right for you guys to have some flour and some lard, and I'm going to put it on his bill. We got in debt. So say next season, we had a good crop, a lot of cotton, high cotton. We were in high cotton, they called it. The cotton is high. That means that we got plenty of cotton. We got the best cotton. We're going to make good money at the marketplace, hopefully. But no, maybe we did have a good year. The planter had a good year. And he came back and he gave us more money this time than we got last year. Man, we was happy to get more money because we worked really hard to make sure that cotton was good cotton and grew high and grew well and much of it. And then the man would say, well, yeah, y'all made a lot of money this time, a little more money this time, this year. Now, you remember, I lent you that money last time, and I still owe them people down at the store. So you need to make it right. You need to pay your debt now that you got your money. The season's over. We have to settle up on our debts. And so you still owe for that sack of flour and that can of lard from last winter. And so I'm going to take some of this money back to go pay off that debt with. And then we looked at the money that was left over and we realized we was in the same place we were when the cotton didn't come in. And so we had to borrow some money to make it through the winter. We never got out of debt, man. My folks ran off from this farm, packed up one night and disappeared. Now, my grandmother was against that. In her day, and I'll give you her words, if you were in debt, man, if you left town, they would send the high sheriff. It's what she called the high sheriff. They would send the high sheriff after you because you were running on a debt. So she was afraid to run off. But my mother wasn't. They booked. But they found out they were never going to get out. They were working their butt off season after season. And they realized they never were going to get out of debt. They weren't going anywhere. It was like that hamster on the wheel. I'm talking about my family, but I'm talking about you. Don't get it twisted. Are you sharecropping? My family was sharecroppers. They were supposed to share the crop after it came in from the market. But they didn't know how much the crop was selling for. I didn't read the commodities page of the business of the newspaper. Anyway, I need to ask you, are you sharecropping? At the end of the year, are you still in debt? Have you paid off your debts? You started a fresh new year? No. You're still in debt because debt has become a way of life. Why? Because nobody is going to pay you what you're worth. And so to close the gap between what you get paid and what you need to eat to survive, we let you go borrow some money. The more debt you get, the more likely you are to come back. In fact, it's called the new chains. They're not physical chains, but they're chains. The new chains, they call the new chain on your arms and hands and feet. Is debt. I bet you're checking your credit score. Why? So you can borrow some more money. That's the only reason to check your credit score. Make sure it's good enough to walk in some loan company somewhere and borrow some money. It's become a way of life. You owe. So off to work you go. My folks left. And I want to give you some advice. And this is not for sharecropping. This is for any situation in your life. Whatever your situation is, you accept it, you change it, or you leave it. All else is madness. All else is stress. All else is craziness. You accept it, you change it, or you leave it. All else is just straight madness, craziness. drama. All else is drama. Stress. You accept it. You change it or you leave it. Don't stress out. My family left the plantation. We accepted it for a while. We found we couldn't change it. So we used a third alternative. We booked. We got up. We left. We got our hat. We had it up. We left. We booked up. We packed everything up one night and hit the road to the next state where they couldn't come get us. And we were in debt. And my family was scared to go back down there again because of that. We owe them. I said, Grandmama, what is sharecropping? And she said, sharecropping is when you work all year round for the man. And at the end of the year, you owe him. I'm going, how does that work? And she explained that process that I just explained to you, debt. You work all year round for the man. At the end of the year, you owe him. That was sharecropping. It was supposed to have been we split up the crop with the owner because we're doing the work. But it turns out nothing like that. Turns out we were debt slaves. No change, but we couldn't go anywhere because we were deep in debt. And the high sheriff would come and get you if you run out on your debt. Guys, there used to be something called debtor prisons. Are you in debt? Are you owe anybody? I'm talking to you. Are you in debt? There exists today, not in the 1800s, not in the turn of the century, or not in the 1800s or 1700s. Today, there exists debtor prisons. It didn't end in the 1800s. There are seven states, mostly southern, who still employ some level of debtor prisons. You owe money, they can come get you in Texas. If you owe money, they can come get you in certain places, in certain states like Texas, Alabama. Funny how they southern states then. They can come get you, man, and lock you up until the debt is paid off. Free labor. Today, not 1800s. Are you in debt? They're bringing back the debtor prisons. And they exist in several states right now. They can come get you. You owe money and haven't paid it. In Arkansas, if you cannot pay your rent, you can be late on your rent and haven't paid your rent, and they can come get you. In Alabama, they can come get you and lock you up and put you in something we used to call workhouses, a workhouse. It's a prison, but you work there. You know, it was a big thing after Reconstruction. A lot of people were sent back to the fields as free labor because they were paying off, because they were arrested for debt. And you in debt. You better think about it. When you think it doesn't affect you, when you play this game, you better wake up. You better read the business section. You better do better than my family did. You better look at the business section and turn to the commodity page and how much cotton is selling for before that man comes back here and tells you a lie about how much he got for the cotton. But you don't care about that. All you want is some money. And you'll go sell yourself. You'll go sell, I did it. You'll go sell your labor for money. And if you do that, they ain't gonna never pay you enough. But what they will do is they'll let you get a payday loan What they will do is they let you borrow money because debt makes money for them. And it locks you into getting up, going to work the next day, whether you want to or not, whether you're able to or not. So what do you do in a world where you need money, but you don't control money? You don't control its value. You don't control its supply, how much money out there. You don't control any of that. So what's the revolutionary to do? When I come back, we're going to enter our little talk show section of our show. So I'll have a number you can call in if you're interested. And if you want to make a comment on the subject. And I'm going to give you a little music. And I'll be right back. You see, we need to talk about what you need to do, how you need to negotiate this environment. And if you haven't thought about that, hang in there. We need to talk. Thank you. You're listening to Revolutionary Life. We got minutes left for our little call-in section, guys. And if you have any comments, questions, et cetera, this is your time to shine. That call-in number is 319, area code 319-527-6060. 319-527-6060. And we're talking about money here tonight. And I wanted to talk to you about navigating this storm, navigating this weather, navigating this financial environment when you don't control anything in it. Hello. You don't control where the money come from. You don't control how much it's worth. You don't control nothing. But what you don't even control the money in your pocket, I told you. When Ronald Reagan froze the minimum wage, you got poor, Jack, without anybody taking a dime out your pocket. You don't even control the money in your pocket and what it's worth. How do you negotiate in such an environment? Let me ask you a question. Does anybody here know anything about selling ships? In the old days, the Europeans used to sail ships. In the ancient, old days, the Europeans had a square sail on their ship. If the wind blew and hit that sail, it could push them down through the ocean, down through the ocean. But if the wind was blowing against them, it would push them back to where they came from. They'd have to take that sail down if the wind was not blowing in their favor. When the wind blows, Jack, is it blowing in your favor? You don't even know. You don't read the business section. You don't look at the stock market. It looks at you. There's a labor market. Uh-huh. You work for a living. You sell your labor. Did you know that there's a labor market? Did you know that labor was a commodity? Like money, labor has been turned to a commodity for the sole purpose, something produced for the sole purpose of sale or trade. Your labor is a commodity to be bought and sold. Like a can of soup, pork bellies, corn, cotton. There's a labor market up there in Wall Street. So if you labor, if you sell your mental and physical labor, you might not play the market, but you better bet they play you. How do you negotiate when the winds are not blowing in your favor? Well, the Europeans used to have this square sail, and it just wouldn't work. And so if the wind wasn't blowing in your favor, you had to stay close to the shore. And so you didn't want to get way out there in the ocean, and the wind stopped blowing, and you just sit there. Or the wind blow you back to where you came from if you kept sails up. It wasn't until they got down to the Mediterranean, North Africa, Greece, all down through there, that they discovered that the North Africans, Mediterraneans, were using something they used to call the Arab sail. And it looked like a triangle. It wasn't square. And they introduced something called tack, T-A-C-K, tacking, tacking and jibing, J-I-B-E or G-Y-B-E, tacking and giving. If you don't know anything about that, guys, this is how you negotiate in the wind that you don't control. You don't control the wind. Nobody controls the wind. And so how do you sail across the oceans when the winds are not blowing in your favor? The Europeans couldn't do it because they had a square sail. And if the wind blew against them, it blew them back to where they came from. They couldn't make any headway. When they got down to North Africa, and when they got down into the Mediterranean, they found that these folks down there, ancient Egyptian drawings you see on the walls of ancient Egyptian drawings, you're going to see a sail on a boat that looks like a triangle. The reason for that is so you can tack. So you can use the wind to take you wherever you want to go, no matter which way the wind is blowing. You got to learn how to tack. You got to learn how to attack the wind. You got to learn how to use the wind, because you don't control the wind. Oh, you don't sail? That's all right. Look it up. You got to get taught how to attack. I'll be back. To Revolutionary Life, and we're talking about cash money. Money, 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 money. Money. Some people will lie, they will cheat. Some people don't care who they hurt or beat. We're talking about money, y'all. And since you don't control it, and I think I've made that clear, since you don't control its value, its supply, its worth, since you don't control the wind when you're on the ocean in a boat, how do you use that wind to get down? How do you get where you're going? How do you go forward? Regardless to which way the wind is blowing. Regardless to which way the wind is blowing. Oh, I know most of y'all don't sail. Most of y'all don't own sailboats. I go out on sailboats. Most of you wouldn't know how to rig a sail. Most of you don't know a jib from a tack. A jib from a tack. Tack. T-A-C-K. I'm going to ask you to look it up. I can't teach you to sail tonight. One night. But I guarantee you, if you learn to sail. And that's just a euphemism, guys. For moving forward. If you're going to move forward and you don't control the wind, that's in somebody else's hands. You either don't spend, you can spend your time trying to take control, talking to some of you revolutionaries of the wind, but that's futile, in my opinion. But since you can't control the wind, you can control the boat, baby. Your finances. How do you move forward in a world where you control nothing and where they play you? because of it. They play you because of your ignorance. That's all. My folks picked cotton, but when the man went and sold that cotton and came back and gave them their share, my folks then hadn't bothered to turn to the commodities page in the business section of their newspaper and see what cotton was selling for that day. You better bet the planter knew. You didn't have anything. You just needed your money. You don't care about finance. You don't care about Wall Street. You don't care about investing and all that stuff. You're trying to raise a family. You're trying to have a budget. Well, let me tell you something. If you're going to fail financially, you're going to have to learn how to tack. A ship on the sea can't control the wind and which way it's going to blow. But if you got that Arab sail, if you got that triangular sail, in fact, it's really called a Latine sail, L-A-T-E-E-N. If you got that Latine sail, you got special sails that can capture the wind no matter which way it's blowing and blow and allow you to tack your way like a snake against that wind, and you continuing to go forward, wind or no wind, blowing in your direction or not blowing in your direction. You don't control it, so it doesn't matter which way the wind is blowing when you know how to tack. You can still sail forward financially. I wish I could teach you to tack tonight. My lines are open. Area code 319-527-6060.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Revolutionary Life. This is Gary. And we're talking about money tonight. And I wanted to touch everybody out there because we're all in this financial boat. We all got our own financial boats. And I introduced the concept of sailing to you. Because I wanted to give you a scenario of being in a boat or being in a situation where you don't control anything about it. You don't control the wind if you're sailing a boat. You can't tell the wind which way to blow. How do you get around that being in an environment? Well, when the wind might blow in your favor one day and the next day, when you wake up the next morning, the wind's blowing against you. You're going down. You're going back instead of forward. Most of y'all still using boats, using sails on your boat that are square, like the old Europeans used to do. And when the wind wasn't blowing in their favor, they got blew back to shore where they came from, or they took that sail down. And they use oars or something, manpower, to keep them from going, ended up right back where they started because the wind changed. And I told you the Europeans got down to the Mediterranean that they found that the people in the Mediterranean, the North Africans, the Greeks, the people in the Mediterranean had Latin sails, had triangular sails, not square sails. And not only did they have triangular sails, they were able to move that sail around and capture the wind no matter which way it's blowing. Any way the wind blew, they could tack, T-A-C-K, or jib, J-I-B-E. They could work that sail, in other words, such as it didn't matter which way the wind was blowing. They didn't control the wind any more than you control the financial markets or the labor market or the debt market. But you're involved in all of them, and don't think you're not. It ain't your fault. If you're struggling to get by, guys, if you're wondering why every time you take two steps forward, you have to take two steps back, it ain't your fault. You need money to do your business, but you don't control money. It's like the wind. You don't control it. So what do you do in such an environment? Are you just swinging in the wind? Or are you able to say, hey, any way the wind blows is cool with me. Any way the wind blows is cool with me. I don't control the wind. I control my financial boat. But I ain't wearing no square sail I know better. And if you're still flying a square sail on your boat, no wonder you take two steps forward and three steps back. Because the wind changes based on the markets that you don't control either. The money market. Your money is a commodity, Jack. It might be worth something today. It might be worth less tomorrow. How do you negotiate your financial budget in such an environment where you control nothing of it, none of it? You better learn how to sail. You better learn how to tack. You better learn how to jib so you can move forward any way the wind blows. I want to thank everybody for listening in. We're coming down to the end of our show. I just want to let everyone know that all of these presentations that I do on this show are all recorded. And so when you come to this show, whether I'm on or not, you can go to the on-demand section and look at tons of shows I've done on all kinds of subjects, guys. And and you can play those old shows. You can play those old shows. You can play this show in about an hour or so after it ends. It should be also in the archive there on the on-demand section where you can pick it and play it back again if you like. I want to let you know that. I want to let you know that I'm going to be here every weekday night between 7 and 9. I want you to know that this is a call-in show. You don't have to call in. But it's a call-in show just to take your questions and comments to see where we're going. See if you're digging this. See if you're reading this. See if this is making sense to you. See if this is something that you want to know more of and more about. You can guide the subject matter based on your comments and concern. So I have a chat room. That chat room will be open as well. And so if you don't want to come on the air, and you will be on the air, I tell everybody, I don't have a secretary. So when you call me, you're going on the air. Everybody's going to hear what you have to say, and everybody's going to hear my response. Don't be scared. You got a question? You got a concern? I got a chat room and a phone number. Ta-da. You can talk to me. And I'm sure we're going to talk to you these nights if you're willing to listen. I want to thank you for listening in. I want to thank everyone who listened in tonight. I'm Monday through Friday, guys, because on the weekends, I'm going to announce once again. It's kind of like a commercial. It's not a commercial yet. But one of the things that I do is I teach. And you might have picked it up. But I teach. I teach a computer IT class on the weekends, and I teach a Spanish class on the weekends. And a reason I call that a commercial, because sooner or later, I'm going to start giving out the dates and times of those classes, because I do some of them in person, and I do some of them since COVID has come, since this COVID pandemic, I've been doing most of these classes online via Skype or Zoom or something like that. I'm using Skype right now, and I'm conducting some of my classes on Skype. As we go along, I'm going to be giving out the dates and times of those classes, and if people are interested in learning Spanish, and I call it Spanish for the English speaker, because it's Spanish for people who may not have to speak it every day, but they don't want it to become an obstacle to them communicating with their customers, relatives, friends, neighbors, or places they visit. And also I teach an IT class. It's a basic IT class. It's just how to get the best, the most out of your equipment. Also how to buy equipment so it doesn't become obsolete the next day. That kind of thing. All right. And we do that with cell phones, IT information, how to best use that phone. We also, to get the most out of it, you pay a lot of money for the equipment, guys. And some of you don't know how much, you don't know how to make your computer pay you. You know how to make your phone pay you. Anyway, so also to my IT class, we also handle things like smart TVs and how to get all that set up and running optimally. All right, guys. And so I'm going to be recruiting to those classes at some point. I'll be giving out the dates and times of those classes, giving out the Skype number where you can log in and come online and join my classes, join my computer classes, join my Spanish classes. We have a lot of fun. We learn a lot in these classes, guys. And it just keeps you sharp. And so look forward to that because I need more students. And I'm getting rid of some students, and I have to get some new students and that kind of thing. And so I'll be giving out the dates and times of my classes at some point and inviting everyone who's interested to join. All right. Thank you very much, guys. And that's my commercial that's my commercial presentation for the day. And I hope you liked the presentation. A lot to talk about. All right? Because we're talking about cash money. We're talking about money. We're talking about that mean green. We're talking about ducats. We're talking about dust. We're talking about that cabbage. We're talking about that lettuce. We're talking about money, guys. We're talking about shekels and lira and pounds and pesos and euros, money. You probably got some in your pocket. What it's worth may not be nothing in the morning. I don't know. I don't control that. And neither do you. But a situation that you can't control, but you need to move forward in, you need to know how to navigate those waters, baby. And so we need to talk. But I thank you for listening in to this part of the money presentation. Maybe we need to do a money too. Sailing your ship, learning how to tag the wind. You can't control the wind. You're out of control. But you ain't no victim either. You're not just the victim of the stock market and the money market, labor market and the debt market and the commodities market and the Federal Reserve and all that mess. Those are the people who manipulate the cost of living. You don't control them. You don't control that. But you control your boat. And if you still got a square sail, we need to talk. If you don't know how to tack, we need to talk. But we only got a few minutes. I got to talk to you. So I may do a money two. Money one and money two. You know, the Federal Reserve got something called an M1 and an M2. You know what an M1 and M2 is? It's the federal money supply. They measure how much money out there. Do you? Do you know how much money is out there? I'm just saying, you don't control none of that stuff. But you still got to navigate those waters. You still got a financial boat. And you probably still wearing square sail. Instead of the Latin triangle sail. On your boat, where any way the wind blows, cool with me. I'd like to thank everybody for listening in. Hope this was informative for some and maybe reaffirmed something that you already knew for others. And if you stick with me, guys, we're going to get a little bit deeper. This is revolutionary life. This is about revolutionary change in every aspect of your life. And tonight we're talking finance. But we talk family. We talk relationships. We talk society. We talk social organization. We talk about everything. But only the things that matter. Hopefully to you. Everyone, thank you again. As our show comes to an end, I'm going to throw you some music out there, and you have a wonderful day. Take charge of your life. Don't swing in the wind like clothes on a clothesline. You only have three choices about your situation, folks. You accept it. You change it, if you can, or you leave it. All else is madness. All else is just stress. All else is just drama. You don't hear me. I'm going to see you tomorrow at 7, right here, Blog Talk Radio, Revolutionary Life. See you tomorrow. Good night.
Das ist so los. Alles, was ich kann. Thank you. Der Typ von Bob. Das ist Ding, sei es denn.